Hello and welcome to Why Family Based Solutions podcasts. Today is the 11th of March 2019 and I'm Florence. In today's podcast, I would like to talk about some of the obstacles in the process of deinstitutionalization. As you may have noticed this month, there are quite a few blog posts about different aspects of deinstitutionalization. So in this podcast, I would like to give you some examples of things that I've encountered in practice where certain hurdles or humps were encountered or where things didn't go as well as had been expected. One of the examples that I would like to talk to you about is in the early stages, trying to convince people that deinstitutionalization is a good idea. In this case, a few years ago, I was talking to the management of a large institution that catered for up to 300 children. Most of these children were children of commercial sex workers who had been removed from their families and put into the institutions to try to protect them against the environment of the red light district and against the risks of ending up in the profession themselves. This institution really had the best of intentions, wanted to give these children better chances in life, but they were a large-scale institution and they did not have nearly enough caregivers to give anywhere near adequate care. Over the years, I had already talked a lot to people here and provided training to caregivers, making them understand the risks and consequences of institutional care, the consequences of not having enough physical contact, attention, stimulation, and the opportunity to attach. So there was some understanding of these drawbacks in this place. Then when I started to concretely talk about moving towards family-based care, some other hurdles were put up. Although they all understood that it wasn't a good thing to have children in an institution, I found out during this conversation that clearly some of my messages had not gotten through, even though I had advised them against that, having explained that when you're not able to get more caregivers, the only way to get a better ratio of caregivers to children is to wait for children to leave, either by going back to their families or by aging out, so becoming adults and leaving the institution. That way, the number of children goes down, improving the ratio between caregivers and children. For a while, they seemed to be listening to that, but then they had gotten quite a lot of new kids in, saying that they had vacancies because quite a few children had left. Again, I try to explain to them that when you don't have enough caregivers and when the children are not receiving adequate care, having children leave does not mean that places are freed up. But they put it to me that I did not understand the situation, that these children were in very risky situations, and that while they understood that having a child in an institution was not ideal, they felt that taking the child out of the red light district and into their institution was picking the best of two bad options. I did not agree with this. If it would have been a case of discussing taking the child out of the red light district to temporarily put it in an institution while within a few weeks a family-based situation would be found for that child, then I would agree. Then I would agree that the child would probably be better off for a few weeks in less than ideal circumstances out of a risky environment if they were going into a family where they would receive the kind of care they actually need. But that was not what we were talking about. We were talking about taking very young children out of their families, even in a risky situation, and putting them in an institution for the entire duration of their childhood and their youth. This, I felt, was not the best of two bad options. Because in the long run, the damage done to the child's development, to the child's brain, to the child's health, are much, much worse in all likelihood than having to stay in a risky environment, but not one that is immediately life-threatening. So that was one hurdle that I encountered, and that I have encountered more than once in discussions with people. A failure to understand quite how deep the damage done by institutional care is, especially from people who are very well-intentioned and really want the best for the children they are trying to help. Another example that I would like to bring up is the situation where people are first introduced to the thought of deinstitutionalization. And while there are always some reservations when they first hear about the idea of deinstitutionalization and taking the children out of their institution and into the community, there are times when once you've talked about it a little bit more and explained different aspects a bit more, suddenly this enthusiasm grows and this determination to do this for the children, to help the children, to set up this new system and get these children into better situations. It is wonderful to see this enthusiasm and the passion that suddenly blooms in people, and their determination and drive to get this done and to do whatever it takes. However, I have seen situations where this enthusiasm kind of carried people away to a point where it wasn't so positive anymore, unfortunately. Deinstitutionalization is quite a complicated process that has a lot of aspects. So when people are new to this, they need training to make sure that they really know what is needed, what the different aspects of the situation are, what needs to be taken care of, and what are the risks of things going wrong that need to be assessed and that need to be addressed. Before this training has been given, it can seem like it's a pretty simple thing. It can seem like it's just a question of opening your doors and waving goodbye to the children. And unfortunately, I've seen some cases where this is exactly what happened, in a manner of speaking. In one situation, someone had visited a children's home and had spent 2, 3 days talking to everyone, convincing everyone, and giving a very clear understanding of the benefits of family-based care. And when this person left, in the week following his visit, everyone was so enthusiastic and passionate about getting this done that without waiting for anything else, they decided to just go ahead. They started looking at certain children, looking at their backgrounds, looking at who had parents, and then children who had parents and who they felt might be able to go home were asked, "Would you like to go home?" Of course, the answer was yes in pretty much every case. The children wanted more than anything to go home to their parents and are not aware of other issues involved that might make that more complicated than they realize. So the children said yes, and the next day they were told to pack their cases and they were sent home without anything further. If you have been reading the blogs, and if you are reading the blogs that are following still, you will realize that this is not a good thing. That it is very risky to send children home without any preparation, without any assessment of the kind of situation they are going to go to, without any assessment of what kind of support the family need, and without psychologically preparing these children for this major transition in their life. There are many ways in which this situation can become traumatic for the children, and in which this situation can end up breaking down, making it impossible for the child to stay at home and causing a situation where the child will have to leave home again, which again is a very traumatic thing for the children to experience. And there is also another issue at stake. For the individual children, there's a real risk in not using proper preparation and proper procedure to move them from an institution into a family-based situation. On a larger scale, there's another risk. If deinstitutionalization is a new thing in the area, with a lot of people very skeptical about it, and it is done in a way that is rushed and not well prepared, as I said, there's a large chance of it failing. If these individual placements fail because they were not responsibly handled, this can easily be taken up by people in the region or even by government officials as proof that this is not something that can be safely done, as proof that this should not be done. And that can put the entire process of deinstitutionalization in the region or even in the country at risk. So there are really, really high stakes when it comes to doing deinstitutionalization properly. And then the final example of this podcast, which shows how high the stakes can be for the children. With the preparation for the children, it is very important that they have a sense of familiarity of where they are going before they are moved out of an institution and into a family, whether it's their own family or a foster family or a family type home, such as a small group home. If they are properly prepared, the transition can be very smooth without much trauma for the child and without any serious behavioral difficulties and things like that. However, if preparation is not done properly, the impact and the consequences can be very, very serious. It has been shown that with children who have severe intellectual impairments, the consequence can even be death. Children have died from the shock and the trauma of being taken away from a place where they were in one room or one bed for years at a time and suddenly being taken into a different kind of situation that is unfamiliar to them, that they have no frame of reference for dealing with, and that they do not understand. That psychological shock can be so great that the body does not continue. That's the theoretical part of it. I have actually seen something very like this in practice. Many years ago, a girl of about 10 years old with a severe intellectual disability and no physical disabilities at all, she also had some behavioral difficulties, was moved into a foster family without any preparation. She had not been told in advance that this would happen. No one had explained to her what would happen, and no one had given her the opportunity to meet with the people she would be living with or to arrange anything that would help the transition. Instead, she was just put in a car, taken to the foster family, and left there. This had a bad effect on her. She was in a kind of shock, and over a few days, she really withdrew into herself, becoming very hard to reach. And over a number of weeks, it got to where she started to refuse to get out of bed, and eventually, she even refused to eat. This was a very serious and dangerous, situation. In the end, we were very fortunate, and they managed to reach this girl to really talk to her and help her come out of her shell. She ended up not dying, and engaging more with her foster parents. So in the end, there was a happy ending to this story, but it could very, very easily have ended differently. And it is known that there are many cases where it does. So particularly with very young children who are too young to really understand you explaining these things to them, or children with a severe intellectual disability who have the same problem, the preparation process needs to be even longer than it is with other children. And it needs to be done in a way that works for them. So again, this is something you need to have some training on before you start with it. So these are some of the obstacles in the deinstitutionalization process. But please don't let that discourage you. It is entirely possible to responsibly and safely transition children from institutional care to family-based care, and they do tend to be much, much, much better off when they are growing up in a family. Thank you for listening, and keep educating yourself on how to help, not harm, vulnerable children, so we can keep moving towards family-based solutions for all children.